Now call case number 09CA2193 Valerie Perea against Treehouse Metropolitan District. I understand that the appellee has a visual aid that you want to use? Has opposing counsel seen it? Do you have any objection?
It was shown to me about a moment before we walked in, Your Honor. Obviously, it's not to scale.
Let me ask this. Is it something that was entered into evidence at the trial? Do you have an objection to the use of it as a visual aid here?
Well, I don't think it's an entirely accurate depiction of the layout of the lines, and so I do have an objection.
We'll permit its use as a visual aid. We will not credit it as being accurate to the testimony. And since it was not in evidence, we will not consider it as having been before the trial court.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeff Driscoll. My registration number is 21825. I'm here on behalf of the appellant Treehouse Metropolitan District, and with me today is Matt Lamington. He's a member of the board for the district. The issue before the court is whether the water line that leaked was a public water facility that was both operated and maintained by the district. The evidence in the law in this case leads to the conclusion that it was not a public water facility that was both operated and maintained by the district, and therefore it was error for the trial court to find that there was a waiver of the district's immunity in this matter. First, I'd just like to give you a quick brief overview of the layout of the system. I know that you've got the briefs, but you've got William Drive, and underneath William Drive is a 6-inch ductile iron pipe, which is a main water pipe. Connecting into William Drive is a private driveway. And if you leave William Drive and go down this private driveway, on your right is Ms. Perea's lot, which is lot 104. If you continue down the driveway on the left side is the Careful lot, which is lot 103. And then at the end of the driveway is the Ryan lot, which is lot 103A. Lying underneath this private common driveway is a 1-inch copper line. And that connected into the 6-inch main line. And then coming from Ms. Perea's house was a 3/4-inch copper line that connected her house into the 1-inch line. And then there were two separate 3/4-inch copper lines that connected the Careful and the Ryan residences to the 1-inch line as well. The Careful and the Ryan residences were connected by virtue of a T device. The 1-inch line went into the leg of the T. One arm of the T went off to the Ryan residence, and the other arm of the T went off to the Careful residence.
Excuse me, help me. Where was the T located?
The T was located underneath the private common driveway.
That's right at the end of the line of the 1-inch line?
Yes, sir.
So the 1-inch line goes no further. It ends at the T?
Yes, sir. Okay. That's my understanding.
Is this, is there any evidence as to whether this 1-inch line was owned by the district or had been dedicated to the district or was in an easement to the district?
There's no evidence of that whatsoever, Your Honor.
Okay.
And that, so the 1-inch line didn't leak. What leaked in this case is the Careful 3/4-inch line. The rules and regulations of the district specify that everything between a main and the residence is considered a service line. And so everything I just described, the 1-inch line, the three separate 3/4-inch lines, the T connection, all lie between the main line and the respective residences of those three lot owners.
I thought a service line only went to one customer.
Under the rules, it does say that a service line services that improvement only. Correct.
But you're saying this one-inch line, which apparently services three customers, that was a service line?
Well, under the rules, the definition of a main line, you know, helps shed some light on this, and it gets back to the comments that you made as far as ownership, possession, or a dedicated easement. And this one-inch line is under a private common driveway. It's not owned by the district. There's no easement dedicated to the district for that one-inch line.
But there's no evidence to that effect anyway.
Correct.
There's no evidence to the contrary either, is there?
No, sir.
Thank you. Is there a dispute here now, as I understand it, as to exactly where or how the leak occurred? I mean, somehow we have this T, and we have some dispute here, as I understand it, as to whether the T itself failed or whether the junction leaked, or does that matter?
I don't believe that there's a dispute. I think there's a different interpretation of the evidence, but there's only one witness that identified the source of the leak, and that was Charles MacArthur, the president of Native Excavating. And he, and particularly in my reply brief, I detailed his testimony, and it's the only testimony as to the source of the leak, and that is that it was in the careful 3/4-inch line where it joined at the T connection. There's no.
Did the trial court make a finding in that regard?
No, sir, he did not.
So we had an expert witness testifying that the leak was in the 3/4-inch line at the juncture with the T.
Correct.
Careful side, the careful Correct. Side of the junction of the T. But the trial court did not conclude that.
Well,
did not make a finding in that regard.
You know, if you review the trial court's order, he makes no findings of fact. He just makes a conclusory decision, and he doesn't have findings of fact. What you have for his order is the initial proposed form of order that was filed with the original brief for the motion to dismiss, and appended to that proposed form of order is the judge's conclusory decision that this was that this fell within the waiver, and I'm sorry, that it fell within the operation and maintenance exception to immunity.
I believe you were going to go forward with some discussion about the definition of main or main line and how that affects this one-inch line being a service line.
Yes, sir. I mean, if you look at page 6 of the, actually it's pages 5 through 7 of the reply brief, where I quoted the definitions under the district's rules and regulations. And on page 6, it talks about a main line being more than 2 inches, servicing two or more customers. But the distinction here is situated in a roadway or dedicated easement area and dedicated to the district. You know, that 1-inch line is not in a roadway. It's in a private driveway. It's not in a dedicated easement area to the district. It's under private property. The precise location of the leak was actually on Ms. Faria's property. That's where the T connection is at.
And on the Careful's property?
No, it's on Ms. Faria's property.
The T that's leaking or leaked is on Ms. Faria's property?
The T connection is underneath the private common driveway, and the Careful and the Ryan connections came into the T, and that's all located under the private common driveway, which is on Ms. Perea's property.
Okay.
And then the service line extended from the T to a curb valve and box at the property boundary, and then went on up to the house.
So what I understand you to say, tell me if I'm wrong, that this 1-inch line from the main on under William, that this 1-inch line is not a main. It is not a main line because it there's no evidence that there's an easement or ownership or dedication.
That's correct. And the rules also give the district authority to determine the appropriate size of a main and or a service line. And so you have a unique situation here where you have flag lots off of a private common driveway. And so that one-inch line is only servicing those three lots that are accessed off that private common driveway. It sends water nowhere else.
Oh, here's my difficulty. All right, so if it is not a main or a main line, that does not necessarily make it a service line, does it? Service line's also defined. It might be not a main line, but not a service line?
But a service line is also defined as anything between a main and a residence.
Well, it says a district water main.
Correct, and the district water main is a 6-inch ductile iron pipe underneath William Drive. But, you know, I don't.
How is that? Is district water main defined? We have main or main line defined.
We do. District water main is on page 5, and it of the opening brief, and it says shall mean any central water trunk line owned by the district, and providing finished water service to more than one residential structure.
So. But does it have to be more than 2 inches? Or, excuse me, yeah, does it have to be more than 2 inches? Is it possible that this 1-inch pipe is actually a district water main?
Well, again, we don't think it is because it lies between the main, the 6-inch main line and the residence. And again, it doesn't neatly fall within all of the categories and all the definitions for a service line, but what leaked here is the careful 3/4-inch line, not the 1-inch line. And that's the operative fact here, and that's what's at issue, is who is responsible for the careful 3/4-inch line. And the rules are clear that the customer, the owner of the lot, is responsible for that. The careful 3/4-inch line precisely meets all of the definitions of a service line in this case.
So to the extent that the trial court found that the leak occurred, according to Mr. MacArthur's testimony, that is at that point between the T and the 3/4-inch line, or at the juncture of the two.
It's at the juncture.
At the juncture of the two, that would be a service line at that juncture.
Correct. That's the district's position.
And in order for you to prevail on that, does the T have to also be a service line, or what if the T is yours?
Well, the T didn't fail. There's no evidence that the T was defective or failed in this case, and so it falls in the category of the 1-inch line. It's not pertinent to whether or not the careful 3/4-inch line is a service line.
I thought it was the T that failed.
I'm sorry?
I thought it was the T that failed.
No, sir. It was Mr. MacArthur's testimony was that it was a careful 3/4-inch line that failed where it was joined into the T. But he was clear in his testimony, and he was asked by myself, by the judge, and by one of the other defense counsel 3 different times, and that's why I cited his testimony specifically in the reply brief, and he said in response to those questions, he indicated that it was in the careful 3/4-inch line. Your Honor, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time then for rebuttal.
Okay. Mr. Rosen, if you would situate that so Mr. Driscoll can see it.
Hawthorne, can you see it?
Yes.
I just don't want to get too far from the microphone.
Okay. Mr. Driscoll, if you need to move to see it, you can move over.
May it please the court, my name is Andrew Rosen. I represent the plaintiff, Valerie Perea, who's in the court here today. I can honestly say that in 30 years of practice and having sat as a bailiff and as a clerk in the Supreme Court, I've never seen as many misrepresentations of the evidence in a case. Fact is, number one.
Let me just interrupt you for a minute. Yeah. Timmy Wells being inaccurate. Somehow when you say misrepresentation, I I get the sense that you believe they were intentionally inaccurate, and I would caution you to be very careful about saying things like that.
From the testimony, Your Honor.
So you believe they were inaccurate. Please proceed.
Yes. Here is the T. The way it works is you insert the pipe into the T, you flange it out over this flange, and then you slide it back in and you tighten
it. Now, let me ask you, is that the T that was entered into evidence?
No. This is, again, a visual aid to the court to understand what we're looking at.
So you are representing to the court that this is identical to the T that is an issue in this case?
That this is a flared T, 1 inch. I think this is a 1 inch to 1 inch to 1 inch versus 1 inch to 2 3/4 inches coming out the sides.
Did you ask counsel to stipulate to that?
No, this is the first I've seen it, Your Honor. We have in the record a photograph of the T. I'd like to copy it if it would assist the court to look at that.
Thank you.
First, to clarify something, Mr. MacArthur was not endorsed, nor did he testify as an expert in this case. What he testified to is to what he in fact observed. The testimony was as follows. First of all, there is a claim that this is the only tee that ever failed. That is not true. In addition, he said it was the tee that failed as it came out of the 3/4 inch line. Here was his testimony. Question: so the same flared type of fitting that you experienced in the leak here, that's this leak right here, is the same type of fitting that was found in other locations when you were called out to repair leaks. In other words, this was not the first time this happened. Answer: we found similar leaks with flared fittings where they either had a coupling or were attached to a curb stop or corporation stop. Yes. It was, in fact, the T that failed. And I've marked with an X where in the T it did fail. That is, where the pipe goes in. This wasn't a case of this pipe failing. It was a case of where the pipe goes into this T that failed.
Did the trial court find?
Trial court found that basically everything from the curb stop back is in fact not a service line, and that's why you have to read the entire rules and regulations. You must show three things in order to demonstrate that this is a service line. Keep in mind that service line is a term of art, and it's a term of contract. I would concede that as a term of art, this could be a service line, this could be a service line, but under the terms of the contract, it is not. Why? Because you had to show three things. First, it was less than 2 inches. It met that test. Second is it only served one residence. If, in fact, the leak occurred on this side, I guess you could argue that if it was the pipe that leaked, it was, in fact, only servicing one residence. But the problem with that is, who did the district bill for this failure? They didn't bill Mr. Kierfel. They billed both Mr. Ryan and Mr. Kierfel, and the record will show that not only did they bill Mr. Ryan, but they actually imposed a lien on his property. They made him pay when, in fact, he turned around and sold his property. So for whatever reason, the district believed that this was servicing two residences, that this failure involved the servicing of two residences. But the key is that it had to have been installed by the owner. And the undisputed evidence was that at the time that Ms. Perea moved into her house and that her property was ready for a water tap, which you need to obtain before you can construct a service line, that these three curb stops were already in place. If they were in place, all of this piping all existed before any of the residents even bought their homes. And here's what really happened.
Let me ask you this. Did you introduce evidence that those pipes that you've just pointed out were installed by the district?
We were unable to prove it because that evidence was by direct evidence. We were able to prove it by circumstantial evidence. We did have an expert that did testify that, in fact, when these systems are installed, they are installed by the developer up to the curb stops. And that was the standard of practice that was going on when this was constructed. And it makes absolute sense. And the reason why it makes sense
it may well make sense. One of the difficulties we're having in this case is that we don't find facts. And so we can only look at the facts as found by the trial court and the evidence to support those facts. Right now, you're arguing as to who installed this line up the driveway, if you will. And you're saying that you introduced evidence that the developer does that. So let me ask you this. Was the district the developer? Did you introduce evidence that the district and the developer were one in the same?
The district was the developer when it's just like homeowners associations. When a developer comes in and installs a water system, it starts by keeping control over the water system. And then when a certain number of lots are sold, it then gets turned over, but it's still the same water district. It's just that it was controlled by the developer up to a given point.
So the developer then transfers the liability over to the governmental district?
Well, the developer never had the personal liability. The district was created to install these water lines in the first place. And the control over that water district was with the developer up to a certain point in time, and then it turned over to the homeowners.
All right, let me ask this then. You've said that we should look at the definition of service line, and what we need to look at is whether the line connects from a district water main, whether it goes to residential improvements of one customer. But now you're talking about who installed it.
That's correct.
And that's not part of the definition of service line.
It is part of the definition when you read the entirety of the rules and regulations. It talks about who installs the service line. It talks about how the service line is installed. It talks about it's only installed after a water tap is approved by the district and it is installed by the homeowner.
Let me interrupt you a minute though. So if it is not installed by the homeowner, then
it's not a service line.
It's not a service line.
No, because the owner had no control over the installation. It sets forth, for example, and the problem is that when this water district rules and regulations were set up, the developer that built the system did not build it consistent with the way he wrote these rules and regulations. Because the original concept was that the homeowner would connect to the cast iron pipe. And that's why it talks about a service line being that way. And the reason why it wasn't done that way is because, again, this would be potentially speculation, but the fact is that a developer goes, well, hold on a second, if I don't put in the water stops to this point, that means the owners are going to have to come in and they're going to have to dig up my road. They're going to have to cut into it. I can't put in driveways. I can't put in curbs. I can't do any of these things.
What's the law that we have to apply here? I mean, is the key issue where this leak occurred? Is the key issue a combination of where the leak occurred and whether it was a service line?
No, I think the key issue is the fact that the district throughout its entire history, and the testimony was undisputed, that if the leak occurred on the non-residential side of the water tap or of the curb stop, that the district took the responsibility for, paid for, and did not bill the resident for that.
And how does that change the law? I mean, what we're dealing with here is a CGIA. We're dealing with the definition of public water facility.
Correct.
We're dealing with these rules and regulations, and are those then modified by customer habit? Is that your argument? Or, I mean, when I look at this as an appeals court judge, I have to look at what the law is and whether the trial court applied the facts to the law. And what I'm understanding you to say right now is, and please correct me if I'm wrong, regardless of what these written documents say, the practice was otherwise.
What I'm saying is that from the curb stop back is part of the water facility for which the district has responsibility. What the owner has responsibility for is from the curb stop to their home. If the water leak occurred here, or the curb stop failed, because the covenants specifically talk about that, that the curb stop belongs to the owner, then it's the responsibility of the homeowner to make the repair and is liable for the damages that are caused. If in fact it occurs on the non-residential side, it is in fact part of the water system, which the district, as a matter of history, has always treated as part of its water facility.
There's nothing in that regard in the rules and regulations of the district.
The rules
there's
and that, regulations
I, there's
of the
nothing, district. There's nothing that I can see that says what you just said. If it's non-residential side of the curb stop, then it's district responsibility. If it's residential side of the curb stop, then it's the homeowner's responsibility.
It's totally inconsistent with what that the rules and regulations are technically inconsistent with what was constructed by the water district in the first place.
Well, that,
as
that brings
said,
me
Judge Carparelli, this can't be a service line, but it can't be a water main. Our position is that this is a service line. This is a service line. This is a service line by contract. This is a water main by contract. This is neither a water main nor a service line. And in my brief, I talk about the other kinds of lines that this could be defined as. The only way the district gets off the hook is if they can demonstrate that this line, that this fitting, was owned by the homeowner. Because then the burden shifts to the homeowner to make the repair and to pay for it. And the district never treated it that way. This was not the first time one of these keys failed.
Well, that doesn't have anything to do with what the rules and regulations provide, does it?
Oh, absolutely.
How? Rules and regulations, how is that?
The rules and regulations say that the homeowner is responsible for maintaining.
I'm asking what does the district's historical treatment of these types of similar problems have to do with the definition of service line under the rules and regulations that we're looking at and that we have before us?
The rules and regulations are contradictory and ambiguous. It's not clear. It doesn't say, because we all agree that we know that this is not a service line, but it fits the definition. It potentially fits the definition of a service line. And the question becomes, when is it not part of the water facility for which the district is responsible, and when is it part of the water facility the district is responsible for? And throughout the history of this, they treated everything as a non-service line. The only time they treated this as a service line as a matter of contract was when the leak occurred on the residential side of the curb stop. And there was evidence to that effect. We introduced evidence of the repairs that had been made throughout the district prior to this event, in which we showed who was billed and who paid for it. And they came up with one example of a situation where the homeowner was billed and where the homeowner paid for the repair, and the testimony was undisputed that it occurred on the residential side of the curb stop.
Mr. Rosen, is it your argument that under the definition of public water facility that you proved to the trial court, or at least avoided the dismissal, that I guess you would have proved to be under the Trinity hearing that the district operated and maintained the T and everything up to the curb stops?
They did, and they had done it for 20 years.
Now, let me ask you again. is it your position that in the trial court you proved to the trial court that they did operate and maintain?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Based upon the fact that anytime there was a leak on this side of the curb stop, they hired the people to make the repairs, they made the repairs, and they paid for the repairs.
If they were not legally obligated to do that, but did that nonetheless, is it your argument that regardless of whether they're obligated to do it, they did it, and because they did it, then it is a public water facility?
I would say not only that, I would also say that it was a waiver for them to come back now and say, because we caused some other damage as a result, now we're now going to say we're not responsible for fixing these kinds of leaks when they've been fixing them for 20 years.
Of course, we don't have that finding either by the trial court.
No, but there it's a de novo review, and the evidence is there that they in fact always treated these as non-service lines because they didn't bill the clients. They didn't bill the residents.
Thank you, Mr. Rosen.
Just to clarify a couple of points, Your Honors. Obviously the record speaks for itself, but just to quote some testimony, the court asked a question of Mr. MacArthur of Native Excavating, quote, "And you're telling us that was the pipe that went to the Careful Lot?" The witness, "That's correct." The court, "And it was actually in the copper pipe itself that went, the 3/4-inch copper pipe, that's where the leak was." The witness, "The 3/4-inch pipe was where the failure was at that connection." That's in volume one, page 65 to 66, lines 9 to 9. That was Mr. MacArthur's testimony. There was other testimony similar to that at the Trinity hearing. The only evidence in this case as to where the location of the leak at is from Mr. MacArthur. And so if you review his testimony, that will clarify for you where the leak occurred. And the court is correct. This is governed by the Governmental Immunity Act, and the three key terms are public water facility, which requires that it both be operated and maintained, operation, and maintenance. And operation specifically requires that it be for related to the purpose of a public water facility. So if Ms. Perea fails her burden, which we believe she did, to prove that Treehouse maintained the careful 3/4-inch line, then it was error for the court to say that their immunity was waived in this case. Now, if you also look at Mr. MacArthur's testimony, he testified that they had never done any repairs or any services to the 1-inch line or to any of the Perea, Careful, Orion 3/4-inch lines or that T-fitting. The testimony is clear in his testimony that they had never done any repairs on any of those apparatus prior to this incident. And Mr. MacArthur's testimony is also clear that this is the only T-fitting that they had ever encountered in the district before. Now, he did testify that the way the fitting was joined with the 3/4-inch pipe, that they had encountered that elsewhere in the district. But as far as the T-fitting itself, this is the only one that they've ever found. So the court is correct in zeroing in on, you know, where does the district's duty arise from in this case? And it has to arise from the rules and the regulations. There's no other independent duty of care. And the case law, Kelsey, for example, Mesa County Valley School District versus Kelsey, is clear that subject matter jurisdiction cannot be conferred by consent, waiver, estoppel, latches. And that's what they're arguing here. And the evidence just doesn't support that. The evidence is that the rules specified that the service line was owned by the Carefuls. They were responsible for repair and maintenance, and therefore they're responsible for the leak. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case now stands submitted. An opinion will issue in due course. That completes our docket for this afternoon.